Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for Monday, June 9th, 2008, and on this episode we have an interview with members from the Mariachi Theater Company. They are being interviewed by Ann Nicholson Weber, who is returning to Talk Theater in Chicago with a stellar interview. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
Hello, you're listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. I'm your host this week, Ann Nicholson Weber. And I'm here with Rich Katofsky, Kevin Christopher Fox, and Carlo Lorenzo Garcia to talk about the production at Mariachi Theater of Beggars in the House of Plenty by John Patrick Shanley. So welcome, and I'm going to ask each of you to just quickly introduce yourselves. Rich?
I'm Rich Katofsky, Artistic Director at Mariachi Theater.
I'm Kevin Christopher Fox. I directed the show.
I'm Carlo Lorenzo Garcia. I'm a company member with Mariachi Theater Company, and I play Johnny in Beggars.
Great. Well, let's start to talk first about the show itself and then maybe go on to talk about the company and the history of Mariachi Theater. I was drawn to do this interview because I think this is such an interesting play and quite different from Doubt, for which John Patrick Shanley has gotten so much renown. And it's a play, as I understand it, this is a Chicago premiere, so even though it's a couple of decades old. When was it written? Do you know?
91, I think.
Yeah, so coming on 15 years, 16 years, 17 years.
Who's counting?
It doesn't seem to be much produced. So I'm interested to know whose idea was it to do it and why.
There was a Shanley book that lots of us had in school, and this was a collection of 13 of his plays, his earlier works. That all of us had, but Shanley is rampant in theater school. There's such great dialogue and scenes and stuff. And this play was at the back of it, and I was just drawn to the journey then, and that's when my interest started, so that was in the early 90s. And as an actor, I tried to get this produced at a number of companies. I was in a company and got close a couple times, but it didn't work out. And then I started directing a few years ago, and starting out directing is all just hustling and, you know, pitching projects to theaters. And it finally just like hit me like a truck one day. Mariachi is the only place to do this play. So I did up a proposal and talked with Hans, who's a company member here at Mariachi. And they did a reading and liked it. And it turned out that Carlo also had a connection with the play. And it just seemed like a great fit.
And why was this? Why was Mariachi the obvious company to do this?
Rich could probably articulate the actual mission statement better than I could. I don't want to say it.
We approach characters that are misunderstood and self-exile, kind of the underdog kind of characters and beaten down characters, and we like to expose this to our audience in terms of. These are people most people wouldn't even approach, much less want to get to know or understand.
Mm-hmm. And I think misunderstood is probably the best word for what Shanley, what happens in this play and the people that we meet in this play. And the action of the entire play is Johnny, as an adult, leading the audience through trying to understand how things got to the point that they're at with him as an adult. He takes us through the incredible confusion that he experienced as a child, seeing cruelty and love so closely juxtaposed, and seeing the bizarre selectivity of his parents' relationship to the different children, and then the confusion that he experienced as a young adult and seeing the world changing around him. He didn't understand people in his own family and didn't understand a lot of things about himself. So for me, rather than walking around with more of an articulated mission statement, there's just a feeling when you see shows at Mariachi, there is a kind of person that they want to explore, that they want to share with their audience. And all of these people felt like that to me.
It's certainly a very dark sensibility. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we take a look at very dark issues and dark comedy and try to bring the thoughts about it to the surface.
Well, that's interesting you said that, because that's such a striking, to me, aspect of the style of this show, of the script, which is, I mean, the first 5 minutes, you're like, what world am I in? because it seems kind of realistic. You think maybe we're just in a living room with the family. Uh-huh. But then people start saying very surprising things, because the premise of the play is essentially that this, what's usually subtext, just gets said, or that's one aspect anyway. So it has this very surreal quality to it. And also, I mean, in the first scene, the main character, Johnny, who is, as I understand it, the alter ego for John Patrick Shanley, this is really a very biographical play, is, we eventually figure out, 5 years old in a Davy Crockett hat, but right. played by Carlo as an adult. So it's exactly. it's a takes a minute to get acclimated to it. And that's, in some ways, to me, the most interesting thing about the show is the tone of it. I felt almost unique. I couldn't think of something that has quite that flavor that I've seen on the stage before. So maybe talk a little bit about how you began in the rehearsal process to address the style of the show, the flavor of the production.
Sure. I'll talk a little bit. I think it'd be interesting for you to talk as well about what it's like to actually act this stuff.
Okay.
But the thing that I started out with the cast was that the great thing about the surreal quality in the first act is that the audience immediately is as confused as Johnny was as a child. And I tried to encourage everyone to push their choices in a direction that would be the most confusing for him. Mm-hmm. The language is very strong, and going halfway with telling someone that you love them, or going halfway with telling someone that you'll never approve of them, is not anywhere nearly as interesting as going all the way with that. And seeing a gesture or a line of love immediately followed by a very brutal, cruel thing is deeply confusing for a child, and it's also confusing for an audience.
Yeah.
So I felt like we were very much, Johnny begins to play, and you feel like, okay, this is your journey. We're about to follow you here. And he doesn't talk very much in the first act. He's essentially watching a lot of things. He's ignored by many people, and he doesn't get a lot of love that we see in that act. And I've staged it with him sort of downstage, looking up a lot and trying to interact and being sort of pushed away, so that the audience is actually trying to look through his eyes. Mm-hmm. And I figured, rather than try to justify or run away from the surreal elements of it, that the only way to do it was to go very whole hog with it.
Right.
And there's a cleanliness that's required, so it doesn't seem muddy, so that the audience is definitely aware that it's a choice. And then hopefully the audience acclimates within 5 minutes, just like at a Shakespeare. It sounds,
right.
at Shakespeare play, for most people, it sounds like blah, blah, blah for 10 minutes, and then you realize that you've been following it.
Yeah. That was exactly my experience.
Good.
And at first you almost think, are these actors any good? Because what you're seeing is something kind of stylized. You know, it feels, at first, it feels almost, I wouldn't say hammy, but or hokey. I don't know. Something is very unnatural, and you haven't realized yet that the script is surreal. So you feel like you're seeing unnatural acting in a naturalistic setting. And then very quickly you realize, oh, no, that's not the world we're in at all.
Yeah.
And it gets so interesting. So, yeah, Carlo, talk about what it was like from your side.
It's interesting that you say that about like the unnaturalistic acting. I think ultimately all the actors who are performing in this have grounded themselves in a real natural element in order for them to hype up the surreality of it. You know, you have to be brutally honest with your acting in turn to even get to that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's an interesting aspect for me of your character, which is that you know you're John Patrick Shanley,
right.
and that this person this little five-year-old boy is going to grow up to write this play. So you have some information about your character that we as the audience may or may not have. But did you work with that? Was that something you thought about?
To a certain degree, you kind of have to approach it with, like, you know, each person in the play is kind of going through the play with a little bit of future knowledge. Mm-hmm. And having the knowledge that I'm going to end up writing this play, he actually acknowledges it in the second act where he says, you know, maybe I'll write something.
Right.
And I think, you know, you can draw a parallel that maybe this, what I'm going to write is this play about my family. And it's what really drew me to it and kind of fortified the autobiographic quality of it was that if you look at a lot of his earlier works, all of his Shanley's earlier works were about Italian families. And this is like the one sole work that's about an Irish family mm-hmm. living in the Bronx, which is his family
what
living
is,
in the
right?
Bronx. But I tried to approach it as real as possible and staying true to the emotions that John, you know, probably felt growing up in that house. Ultimately, trying to understand why your family reacts the way they do to you and at the same time trying to change them, but then you kind of get to the realization that you can't really change them. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I try to pull a lot from my own experience with my family, and I think that's what a lot of actors, you know, tend to do is to find that emotion and experience in your own life to kind of connect you to the character that you're trying to portray.
Mm-hmm. Well, what were the hardest, just staying with you, Carlo, for a minute more, what were the hardest scenes for you? What were the, in rehearsal you said, oh, God, I need to do this today?
You know, Act 3 is probably the hardest act for me because you are confronting a lot of demons. And, you know, for me personally, there is, you know, a similar relationship with my father. And, you know, going through that every night is, you know, kind of, it kind of excavates some old buried feelings. And it's really tough. It's really tough to, you know, confront that and to go through those emotions, especially having that feeling of, you know, being so similar to John in his relationship with his father.
Did you consider not doing the role? I mean, did it seem like it was going to be too close to the bone?
No, I felt like there were some redeeming qualities to it that you know, I just could not look away from. And I think it's important that's what a lot of actors do, what they do is, you know, it gives them the chance to explore their, you know, past relationships and stuff like that. And I think it was important for me to do. And I think that the way I relate to it is a way a lot of other audience members can relate to it in terms of everybody has a dysfunctional family and everybody can relate to some part or element in this story. So I thought it was, you know, if I can go through it, if the audience can go through it, then I can go through it as well.
Mm-hmm. So. Right. Well, let's talk about the third act, which seemed to me as an audience member the most challenging. And the image that has stayed with me from that is the two brothers, Johnny played by Carlo and his older brother, we're in the basement, we're in a pit. The boys are in this small pit.
Yeah.
We don't really know why. I was very right. interested by that staging choice, but I found it really powerful.
Right.
So maybe, Kevin, you could talk a little bit about what that was.
Shanley, this production incorporates, I don't know, maybe 15 or 20% of things that Shanley actually suggests are in the set. And one of those is that. And I felt it was, even though it was technically one of the things the set designer was like, oh, how in the right? I'm going to put a trap on the floor. Of course I am. Uh-huh. On the floor, on the second floor space. But we also didn't want to run away from the fact that there was a reason that he wanted that scene to open up with both of those boys in a hole, mm-hmm. And not a nice one. So we felt like if we could achieve that was significant. So them being in a hole wasn't my idea, and I thank my set designer for figuring out a way to actually have them in a hole. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was an important image, and Joey says, what's immediately sort of confusing to the audience, Johnny almost seems like he's dropped into this space out of a dream, that he's mm-hmm. he's awakened from a nightmare. And in fact, he has awakened into a nightmare. And he's trying to acclimate himself and figure out where he is. Joey, however, seems to have been there for a while and been existing in this space and being tortured in this space, somewhat physically probably by the father, who he refers to as a demon at that point. But mostly...
And the lighting's all red, and I mean, it feels
yes,
very hellish.
Yes, we're very subtle with that. but Joey says at one point, Joey just wants peace and quiet, and he doesn't want Johnny to disturb it. And he says, he starts this line and he says, I'm just trying to ball up here, and it cuts off. And we talked about what that was, and it was die. Mm-hmm. That he only wants peace at that point, because he can't, his future is told earlier in the play, he's not going to make it, and he can't fight this fight anymore, and he only wants peace now.
He's giving up.
And so anyway, that's why we stayed with the trap. It's a very strong image.
It's really striking. As I say, it's probably the single thing that impressed itself on me the most strongly. Well, it seemed to me that the third act is difficult in terms of rhythm, let's say, that it's pretty long. Maybe I would even criticize the script and say it could have been shorter. I don't know if you would agree with that as a director, but obviously you've got the script you have to make it work.
Right.
And was that a challenge? Was there something difficult about maintaining the energy through the third act? Or?
I think it's important to sort of know what you're up against, and I feel like we went into this pretty clear-headed in terms of what's challenging for the audience. I won't use the word, but I have a phrase that I use talking to actors about the audience response, and it's the what the F-ometer. It's like how high on that meter is the audience's sense of what in the world is happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very high in the first act, and it's actually pretty low in the second
right.
act, which is
settle in.
It's also a very extended scene, but it seems like this could almost be like a real normal scene that happens mm-hmm. on one day. Wow. That's a kind of a relief from the first act. And the third act, it is extended confrontations, but the fact that it's and there's the first scene at the top with Joey, where you sort of figure out where we are. But these are the things that the confrontation with the father and then the mother are the two things that this character Johnny has been terrified of, but knew he had to do his entire life. And this is what this whole story has been building up to. And the stakes don't get much higher for us as adults than confronting things with our parents, because that is the oldest grief and joy and pain and suffering
stuff.
That we know.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that lives the deepest down in us. Mm-hmm. And the power of him telling his father, we could have helped each other. It didn't have to be this way. And the enormous power in him asking his mother, you know, she lists people that she cares for, and he says, and what about me? And the horror of him hearing from her that she can't even tell him that she loves him because it wouldn't sound believable. So hopefully all of that together makes it powerful enough for the audience. The actors have to, you know, they have to go whole hog or it doesn't really work.
Yeah.
But they do.
They do. They really do. The reaction I felt around me was, oh, wow, kind of as the lights come down. We're all just exhausted and pretty overwhelmed. Well, I'd like to talk about Mariachi. I mean, I was so grateful for a chance to see this show, and Kevin is saying, you know, he couldn't get it produced anywhere else, so it's really good that Mariachi exists. I know you've been around for decades, 22 years.
The 13th will be 22, June 13th.
One thing I'm interested in is that usually I feel like a theater company has kind of a natural life cycle of either growing and getting kind of more establishment and bigger budgets and fancier boards, or eventually kind of dying off.
Fizzle off.
Right. Yeah. So this seems like an anomaly a little bit, your company. Do you Do you agree with that? And if so, what are you doing differently?
It is an anomaly. You could keep that.
Okay. We will.
It baffles me even. I mean, we hang by the skin of our teeth over there. And mm-hmm. It's not like our board is so great. It's really non-existent. It's mm-hmm. a few of us, people we go to when we need help. Raising money is a struggle for us. I write all the grants, whatever grants we have. Mm-hmm. We depend a lot on donations, and we have to ask people to help us, you know. And it's hard, and it's sometimes easier just to continue than to stop, too.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times that's the case, too, but I always find a reason to keep going. There's people, new people, who come in. They want to do this. They want to participate. They appreciate the history of the theater. They know where I've been or where we've been, whoever's with us still.
Well, I know Carlo has become a member of the company. How did that come about?
After my first show at Mary Archie was Mojo back in 2004, and I just enjoyed the atmosphere at Mary Archie. The people were really great to work with. The play that we did was excellent. It was probably one of the best plays I've ever been in, despite the fact that, you know, not a lot of people saw it or the press wasn't as good as it should have been. Mm-hmm. But I just really liked, you know, I really liked Rich. I really liked Hans. And, you know, later that summer, you know, helping out with Abbey Fest, they asked me to join the company if I was interested. And I told them, yeah, definitely. Because it was something I wanted to be a part of. Just felt like, you know, it's really great to have kind of like a home to go to. And, you know, Mary Archie's kind of that home for me.
What is different about the way that things are run there that made it feel particularly home-like for you?
Well, it's a lot more casual. I didn't feel like anyone has like a big ego or you know, there's opportunities there. And I don't think, I think there's room for me to grow. I felt like there was room for me to grow there as well. So, mm-hmm. And sometimes you can run into some really interesting people or in other companies and stuff like that who are really, really set in their ways or have just kind of difficult to deal with. And I just felt comfortable with these people. So I kind of stuck around.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder if there's something about a company that isn't trying to get bigger, that isn't, maybe I shouldn't put words in your mouth. Maybe you'd like to get bigger, but you know, that's kind of found your level.
How much bigger can we get? We're pretty big.
Well, another thing that contributed to my wanting to do this interview is a while back I was kind of putting out feelers to the theatrical community to tell me people who they felt were unsung heroes who ought to be better known, and Rich's name came up. And I think that there is a feeling that,
yeah,
that was from, as I say, someone at Steppenwolf, you know, that this company has just been bumping along doing difficult, interesting work for 20 years without a huge amount of, you know, attention or enough, I hope, to keep going. So I think that's really great. I
mean, we're proud of what we do. We know what kind of work we put into what we do, and we know that we want it to be the best it can be. We push people. We get what we need the best way we can get it. If it's a difficult set, we make it happen one way or another. I mean, we don't back away from any challenges, and we fight to do what is good for the play. And that's our main thing, is that whatever is good for the play, we're going to do. We're not going to cast ourselves just because we're in the company either. If there was somebody better than Carlo for the part, we would have probably cast him.
It
would have been hard, but it's something that happens, though.
Right.
And
right.
It's disappointing sometimes, but we're interested in what's right for the play. And
that really shows. I mean, I think that's...
And,
yeah. We'll talk quickly about, I know one of the centerpieces of what you do is the Abbey Hoffman Festival every summer. Mm-hmm. Can you just tell us quickly, you know, what that is and what to expect?
Abbey Hoffman Died for Our Sins is a theater festival that we created to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Woodstock, which this year is the 20th anniversary of the Abbey Hoffman Died for Our Sins.
There goes the 40th of Woodstock, is that right?
No, the math doesn't work out that way. Next year.
Time has changed.
The 40th, well, this will be the 20th Abbey Hoffman. It's weird when you count. The first doesn't count. There's zero. So
gotcha. So what do you? What's up for this year?
So we're trying to do. We basically do the same thing every year. We gather groups and individual performers to perform for 3 days and three nights of nonstop theatrical entertainment, which Woodstock was music and. This is theater.
Equivalent. So and who are some of the companies that will be there?
Generally, we get the Black Forest Theater. We have Red Orchid usually does something. We have Factory Theater comes in usually.
Was Hypocrites on the list?
Hypocrites are on the list as far as I know. We're still hunting and gathering, okay. Trying to put it together.
So what's the format? Is it just short pieces, one hour or
another? 1 hour or less. Anything 1 hour or less is acceptable for the fest. It could be anything they want to do. And we're still entertaining applications. So
what are the dates for that this year?
This year it will be on August 22nd, 23rd, and 24th.
Great. We'll keep an eye out for that. And Kevin, I just wanted people to know that another show you directed is going to be remounted any minute.
Yeah, we're in tech for it now. It's The Last Days of Judas Iscariot by Stephen Adley Gierges, and it's a production that we did at the Gift Theater. And it did very well, and they gathered the support to transfer the show to the Greenhouse upstairs main stage for the summer. And we just started with actors last night in tech, and opens next Thursday the 12th.
And is that the same cast as at Gift?
All but one person, yeah. And I'll be Jesus for 3 days, which is the ultimate act of arrogance for a director. There was no one to do it, so, you know, I had
to. So it's actually just pitching in and doing your part.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I guess I'll be Jesus. Okay.
And yeah. Carlo, what do you have coming up?
Coming up for me, I actually... I have a feature film coming out later this year called Helix. It's a 90-minute ride thriller. It's really great. Stars Alexa Vega, who was in Spy Kids, and Austin O'Brien, who was in Last Action Hero. They're really great people, and should be a really great film.
You mentioned that it was being shot in a very unusual way.
Yeah, it was shot all in one take, 90 minutes straight, starting off at like Lakeshore Drive, you know, with some walking scenes. Get into a Jeep, drive all the way into Old Town, and basically back to Navy Pier. All one continuous take, no stopping.
Something that only a theater actor could probably pull off.
The two other leads were mainly, you know, film actors, but yeah, I mean, if you mess up, you kind of got to go with the flow, right, ad lib,
right,
yeah.
Right. Well, thank you all three. It's really such an exciting show, and I hope people will go see it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for your interest.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of June 9th, 2008. The Million Dollar Quartet will be making its Midwest debut at the Goodman Theater. The Million Dollar Quartet is a new musical inspired by the infamous 1956 recording session that included Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley. The show is the story about the twist of fate that brought together four of music's most legendary figures on a cold December night. The Goodman Theater production will be directed by Signature Theater's artistic director Eric Schaefer, with musical direction by Grammy Award winner Chuck Mead. Tickets are currently available. You can get them by visiting goodmantheater.org or click on over to Theater in Chicago's Coming Soon section. The musical Legally Blonde, based on the hit film, will be coming to Chicago's Oriental Theater for a short run, running from May 12th through the 31st of next year. This popular musical was created by a top-of-their-class Broadway talent team, and it follows sorority girl Elle Woods, who trades in her credit cards for Harvard Law School, in a story about being true to yourself. Stay tuned to Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast for more information as the show nears. Starting last Tuesday, June 3rd, Chicago's Wicked has a new cast. It now stars Lisa Brescia as the role of Elphaba, original company member Christopher Cusick returns to the role of Fiero, and Anna Lee Ashford takes on the role of Glinda. Chicago's Wicked has broken multiple box office records since opening in June of 2005, and it will soon be celebrating its third anniversary here in the Windy City. The Chicago company, however, will only be performing through January 25th. That will be their last performance at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts. David Schwimmer has announced that he will be in the upcoming Looking Glass Theater Company's production of Our Town by Thornton Wilder. Our Town will be directed by Anna D. Shapiro and Jessica Thebus. It will open in February of next year at the Looking Glass. David Schwimmer will be playing the role of George Gibbs, while his pal Joey Slotnick will be playing the stage manager. Stay tuned right here to Theater in Chicago for more information about when tickets for this hot show go on sale. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Mary Archie Theater Company for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson Weber and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.